Western New York race fans, it's time to crank it up.
Start your engines!
For the next hour, the airwaves belong to you. Sit down, strap in, and let's head to WGR's Fast Track.
All right, take a nice big deep breath, buddy.
With your host.
Let's go out there, have a good day, all right, bud?
Dave Buchanan.
Good morning, race fans. 10:00, almost at 11:02. 10:02 here on WGR Sports Radio 550, and welcome to a very special edition of WGR's Fast Track. It is the greatest day in motorsports, the Sunday of Memorial Day weekend, and we are already deep into a triple header of racing, part of which you'll be spending with us here on WGR Sports Radio 550, as we have got today the Grand Prix of Monaco, the Indianapolis 500, and the Coca-Cola 600, and that's what we're talking about here this morning, which is why we're on the air an hour early today, because at 11 o'clock we have to throw it to live coverage of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500, courtesy of the IMS Radio Network. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, halfway through today's show, you'll hear from one of the voices on today's broadcast, turn announcer Nick Yeoman from the IMS Radio Network and IndyCar Radio. He will join us and get his thoughts on today's race and what it's like to be there and all that good stuff. Nick does a great job on their broadcast, and you'll hear from him today, along with the cast of hundreds and hundreds of others on the IMS Radio Network, including Mark James and Donald Davidson, Anders Krohn, the other guy. We've had him on the show before. Now I can't. Jake Query, that was the other one. We've had Jake on the show in the past as well too. They've got a great crew. So live flag to flag coverage of the greatest spectacle in racing, the Indianapolis 500, starts at 11 here on WGR. Hopefully they get it in today. There is a threat of rain in the Indianapolis area, but hopefully they can get it in, or at least get it to an official stage, and we don't have to go back tomorrow for the Indy 500. So that is coming up at 11:35 with Nick Yeoman. Coming up in 11 minutes, though, we're going to go live to Charlotte and bring in Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic. Yes, The Athletic is now covering motorsports, if you haven't heard. And actually, that announcement came out this week. And Jordan is one of the people that is going to be part of their motorsports staff, along with Jeff Gluck, formerly of JeffGluck.com and USA Today, and David Smith from Motorsports Analytics. So Jordan's going to join us in about 10 minutes here to talk about NASCAR and today's Coca-Cola 600 from the Charlotte Motor Speedway, which will also be here on WGR. That will go right after Indy 500 coverage here on WGR. But phone lines are open for you, 803-0551, 888-550-2550. Just bring in here this morning your thoughts on any of today's racing action. How do you celebrate this day of motorsports? You do anything special? Just your thoughts on today's race at Indianapolis or Charlotte, or if you're watching the Grand Prix of Monaco right now, which they're just past halfway in Monte Carlo, with no surprise, Lewis Hamilton leading, but he has been stalked around the street course there in Monaco by Max Verstappen of Red Bull for most of the race so far. And he continues to show the way. Unfortunately, they're in replay, so I don't have the scoring pile on in front of me to give you the rest of the top five or so. But Hamilton does lead Verstappen. Sebastian Vettel is in third. Valtteri Bottas in fourth right now there in Monte Carlo. So that is their working lap, 39 to 78. So just past halfway. And if anything interesting happens, we'll pass that along. Real quick, though, unfortunately or fortunately, as I've done the last few Sundays here in the program, always have to start off with a Bandits thought during this playoff run. Unfortunately, that run came to an end last night in overtime in Calgary as Buffalo lost in Game 2, 14-13. What a crazy game. I was worried when Christian DelBianco made a huge save on Jordan Dersett very early in the game, and I thought it was going to be a very long night for the Buffalo offense. Luckily, it wasn't. They got out in front 5-3, but then Calgary went on a five-goal run, went up 8-5, but Buffalo came back, tied it. The teams traded goals back and forth. Calgary took a lead with 54 seconds to go, but then Corey Small tied it with 27 seconds left. Just an epic back-and-forth classic last night between the Bandits and the Roughnecks. Unfortunately, Buffalo came out on the wrong end. They had their shot there in overtime. Dane Smith with a great chance, Sean Evans with a chance. Unfortunately, DelBianco made the save. Ball goes the other way, and Reese Dutch wins it for the Roughnecks. Tough end to a great season for the Bandits. 14-4. The only time they lost back-to-back games was, unfortunately, in the NLL Finals, but a great season after missing the playoffs for 2 years. The lockout that nearly wiped out the season, but then to put a team together, signing Matt Vince, of course. The trade for Corey Small right before the season for Mitch Jones. Steve Dietrich did a phenomenal job. John Tavares, Rishi Kilgore did a great job as co-head coaches this season. Honored to be a small part of that club and to be a small part of that ride here this season in 2019. Unfortunately, the team is guaranteed to lose at least two players this summer in the expansion draft with the new team in the new Rochester Nighthawks and the team, the New York Riptides. So, unfortunately, they'll be down a couple players. Luckily for the Bandits, though, they are so deep, one of the deepest rosters they've had in a couple of seasons. So, with even losing two players in expansion, they'll still have some bodies to quickly fill those positions. And there'll be the draft, of course, and I'm sure Steve Dietrich will make some moves, but it stinks that that group won't be together again because they were a great group of guys to be around. And again, hats off to Scott Loeffler, Steve Dietrich, and the Bandits organization for a great season. And thank you to John Gertler and Randy Mearns for being great broadcast partners and looking forward to be back next season. But back to Fast Track, I just had to get that thought off the top of my, off the top of my head there real quick. But the Indy 500 today... And, man, what a race shaping up today in Indianapolis. I mean, obviously, the Chevrolets are the favorite teams today with the qualifying performance of the Penske and the Ed Carpenter cars. But I'm really excited, and we'll talk more about this with Nick Yeoman later on in the broadcast. But I'm excited for the Andretti cars of Alexander Rossi and Marco Andretti, I guess. Two guys I will be pulling for today are Rossi and Andretti. No secret, how much I like to talk about Alexander Rossi here on the program, but also I would love to see Marco finally win Indianapolis for his family in the 50th anniversary of his grandfather's win at the Brickyard and the tribute paint scheme Marco's going to have today. Just someone I'm going to be pulling for today as well. But lots of great stories up and down the grid. Tons of former winners. Of course, Elio will try again for his fourth win in the 500 to join that elite club. You've got, Sato and Dixon and Kanaan and all the great former winners of this race that are going to be going for another trip to victory lane and to drink the milk. And then you got all the great rookies in the field, Colton Herta, Felix Rosenquist, Marcus Ericsson, up and down Ben Hanley, just, strong rookie class. And then the great story we got last weekend at Bump Day with James Hinchcliffe getting in and Fernando Alonso getting bumped out of the 500 with a two-time F1 champion with McLaren. And they just did not have their stuff together last weekend. And McLaren and Alonso went home and did not make the field. And Kyle Kaiser and Hunkos Racing shocking their motorsports world by bumping Alonso from the field of 33. And he made his way in and Alonso is out. A great story last weekend in Bump Day qualifying, but amazing story for Kaiser, and great to see Hinch get in. That just would have hurt so bad had James Hinchcliffe not made the Indy 500 for a second straight year after having chances to win it in the past, and for the serious incident he had there a few years ago that almost took his life. It'll be great to see him in the field of 33 today, but this event is just... one of the best in racing, much in the same way, I guess, like a Kentucky Derby is to horse racing, and the Daytona 500 is stock car racing. Indy 500, obviously, is one of those events on the sporting calendar that, regardless of how much you watch that sport the rest of the year, it's a must-see event where everybody has to tune in and witness it. And I just think it's just action-packed, even for a 500-mile race. I mean, just the way... that race quickly goes by. It's over so quickly. It seems like it only runs 2.5-3 hours, but it seems like there's just so much action. That race goes by so fast, and the action is so intense from Indianapolis. And I think that what makes this event so great, and it has bounced back so well over the last 6-7 years now. The failed split, the IRL kart split, all those dark years, and then the reunification, and just these last few years, open wheel racing like this has bounced back in a big way, and that place will be packed on top of just the race itself, but all the other stuff going on. I mean, they've had live concerts going on out of the Brickyard since like 7:30 this morning with the Snake Pit and everything else going on there at Indianapolis. But a crazy day, as I always say, a must-see event, a bucket list event for me. I would love to get there. And of course, a big change this year. Of course, we'll have it here on WGR, but if you're watching on television, you have to find a new network because it's no longer on ABC. For the first time ever, it's going to be on NBC today, which is pretty big change, and quite an all-star cast. They have put together, NBC has, for the broadcast today, and it's Of course, Lee Diffie, who I love. I think he does a phenomenal job. He is going to be handling the play-by-play. Paul Tracy working with him. But they're going to have Danica Patrick, which, you know, take it or leave it. But Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be on the broadcast, which should be interesting to get his insights, even coming from the stock car world. Just cool to have him involved because he's, I think he's such a great presence on TV for NBC and Rutledge Wood. But, you know, they're going to have Mike Tirico, too, as kind of the host of the broadcast and kind of just to bring that big name to the broadcast. I think it makes a pretty big time as well, too, you know, with his experience with the NFL and the Olympics and everything. Looking forward to hear the job Mike Tirico does on today's TV broadcast as well. So 803-0551, 888-550-2550. You know, I talked about my kind of personal favorites with Rossi and Andretti, but what about your favorites for today's race? Again, 803-0551, 888-550-2550. As I said, the Honda cars might be have lacked so far a little bit in qualifying when it compares to the Chevrolet-powered machines, as Chevy did take, you know, 6 out of the 9 top spots in the first 3 rows, including the entire front row. This could be a battle today between the Penske and Ed Carpenter cars. Ed Carpenter, a native Hoosier, his team always runs well at Indianapolis. They seem to excel at this event with Ed Carpenter and his team drivers, Spencer Pigot and Ed Jones. And Carpenter has started on the pole multiple times in this event. He's had chances to win it, but it's hard to go up against the legend of Roger Penske at Indianapolis with all of his wins throughout the years. And again, has a stacked lineup with Pagano, a former champion, Will Power, a former winner, Newgarden, and Elio Castroneves, of course, going for his fourth win in the Indianapolis 500. It should be a great battle today. Again, looking at the front nine, it is Pagano, Carpenter, and Pigot on the front row. Ed Jones, rookie Colton Herta, if that's a name you haven't heard before, his dad Brian Herta, a former IndyCar kart driver, and he already has one win as that 19-year-old driver this season in his rookie year for Harding Steinbrenner Racing, team co-owned by George Steinbrenner IV. He will start the middle of row two alongside Will Power, Sebastian Bourdais, Joseph Newgarden, Alexander Rossi in row three. Row four will be Marco Andretti, Connor Daly, and the aforementioned Elio Castroneves. Row five, rookie Marcus Ericsson, Takuma Sato, the former winner, and James Davison. Excuse me. Row six, you've got another former winner, Tony Kanaan, Graham Rahal, of course, his dad Bobby, a former winner, and Scott Dixon. Oriel Servia, Charlie Kimball, J.R. Hildebrand, row seven, row eight, Ryan Hunter-Reay, another former winner, Santino Ferrucci, a rookie, Matthias Laist. Row nine, Jack Harvey, Jordan King, Ben Hanley with a Dragon Speed team that was a huge upset to make the field. Row 10, Zach Veach, Felix Rosequiv, and Pippa Mann, also a huge story from qualifying, the lone female in today's race. She will start in the 30th position. And the final row that was set during bump day last week, Sage Karam, Hinchcliffe, and Kyle Kaiser, as we talked about. And again, the DNQs were Alonso, and then team cars of Max Chilton and Patricio Ward would have been another rookie in the field. 803-0551, 888-550-2550. The danger of Indianapolis, of course, is another big story that we've seen a lot of crashes in qualifying. It's affected a lot of cars in the qualifying process, especially Hinchcliffe and Alonso, and that's kind of what maybe was the margin of success why Hinchcliffe got in and Alonso didn't, because the Aero Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports team, their backup car was ready to go versus Alonso's McLaren team and the teams they were working with. Their backup car struggled off the box, which is out of the box, which is why they probably didn't make the field, whereas the Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports team had their backup car in race ready and qualifying trim very quickly, and how they got Hinch into the field. Again, 803-0550. Right now, we're going to go to the Western Hotline and bring in, from The Athletic, Jordan Bianchi joins us on the line. Jordan, first off, how does that sound? Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic.
It sounds surreal. I can't believe it myself. I've had to say it a few times this weekend here in Charlotte, and every time I had to kind of catch myself and pause because it just doesn't seem real.
Full disclosure, I booked this interview with Jordan last weekend before the announcement came out, and he did not, you know, let it slip to me or anything. So this was just complete happenstance that we just happened to be having Jordan on after this huge announcement with you and Jeff Gluck. As I said, congratulations, but just real quick, just tell us what you guys are going to bring to The Athletic, and really excited to see what you guys are going to cover.
Well, thank you for the kind words, and really we're going to go deeper into motorsports. We're going to tell you stories that you maybe don't know. We're going to bring you deeper analysis, deeper opinion, deeper new, deeper into the news, and we're going to tell you why, what, how, what things matter going forward when something does break. Really, if you are a motorsports fan, we are going to cover it for you, and we're going to cover it in depth.
Well, you are out in Charlotte, the site of today's Coca-Cola 600, which we'll have here on WGR coming up later today. And Jordan, 600 miles, and this race has been a challenge at best in recent years, maybe to watch, but I think today's race has some hope. I'm expecting some exciting things to happen, especially when the sun goes down today in Charlotte.
Yeah, it should be interesting. If you look back a couple weeks ago at Kansas Speedway, that is another mile-and-a-half racetrack. The NASCAR had a good race. I mean, they had a very competitive race on a mile-and-a-half racetrack. And if you can take that, and the same conditions are kind of going to be in play tonight, where you see a lot of drafting, a lot of strategy, a lot of passing, a lot of aggressiveness, because sometimes you got to block and sometimes you got to kind of move guys around a little bit. Yeah, the makings are there for a good race. And like you said, the last few Coca-Cola 600s have not been the most exciting, but the ingredients are there for an interesting show tonight. And I think tonight is going to be a really fascinating case study to see what this new rules package that NASCAR has implemented for this year, what kind of effect can it have. It's been hit or miss this year at some places, but we're coming off a race at Kansas that was pretty entertaining. Last week, All-Star race was pretty good. So, you know, I'm encouraged by what we're going to see tonight.
It seems like tonight, there could be maybe a little desperation for a couple drivers in the field. I don't know. I always consider this mark of the season kind of a line where if you're not in a playoff position coming out of this race, you really almost start to panic going into the summer months, because the majority of the playoff fields usually traditionally set coming out of this weekend, at least in my personal opinion. And there are a few guys maybe in on points or on the outside with points, but still no wins this year. I think there's definitely a few drivers in the field that today's almost a must win for them just to get a win on their tally for 2019.
100% agree. And if you look at it last year, the 16 drivers that had the playoff spots coming out of the Coca-Cola 600 were the 16 drivers that made the playoffs. So you are 100% correct in that this is kind of a race that you circle and say, you know, we want to be in good position coming out of here. And you look back at the bottom of the standings and see who's on those playoff spots and on the bubble. You know, you've got the Jimmy Johnson, you've got Kyle Larson, Eric Jones, William Byron, are all names that are kind of in the mix, or Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Those guys need good runs. They just need good runs. They probably need a win in a lot of respect to really feel secure about where they're at. And if you look at it, you know, I mentioned William Byron, I mentioned Jimmy Johnson. Hendrick cars are pretty strong this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Keselowski and Kyle Busch both pointed toward the Hendrick camp and said they actually have the best cars right now. This might be a good opportunity for them to get into victory lane and get that win and put themselves in the playoffs. And I also look at Eric Jones. There's a lot of questions about what he's going to do next year. Is he going to stay with Joe Gibbs Racing? A win would do wonders for him on a multitude of levels.
Is Jones on the last year of his contract with JGR?
He is on the last year
okay.
contract. Talked to him the other night. He said he's close to a deal, but until that thing is signed, you know how those things go.
Because that seat, I mean, that's a hot seat. You look at who else JGR has in the pipeline, you know, with them and KBM and their development program, especially with Christopher Bell out there lurking in the weeds. Definitely Jones has to be feeling the pressure knowing they've got a stacked system of guys that they can move into that seat if he does not perform this year.
That's exactly it. He got a win last year at Daytona, made the playoffs, was an early exit, though. Coming to this season, it's kind of been a roller coaster year. Had a lot of good runs, some bad runs. They haven't necessarily had the finishes to reflect how good they've ran at times, but they need some consistency. This is a good opportunity for them. Jones had a really good run at Kansas, finishing the top 10. I think he's going to be a player tonight. And like I said, if he can get a win, that would answer a lot of questions. And even if, you know, things don't come together at Joe Gibbs Racing as we anticipate, and I fully anticipate, I think he's going to resign there.
Mm-hmm.
He would be a hot commodity, and he's somebody that other teams are going to look at, but a win would do would really bonify his credentials, you know, whether with Joe Gibbs Racing or somewhere else.
Since we brought up young drivers, development drivers, a quick thought on that. Over at RCR, what do you think of what they got there? I'm still not sold on Austin Dillon, but Daniel Hemric and Tyler Reddick, who of course won yesterday in the Xfinity Series race, what do you make of the future of RCR with the talent they have right now?
You know, I like Daniel Hemric. I've been impressed what I've seen of him. I would, you know, he hasn't got a win yet in the Xfinity Series. He didn't win in the Truck Series. He still hasn't won in the Cup Series, but he's had some good runs. He's had a rookie year, which means he's had a lot of mistakes as well. Mm. There is speed there. He's qualifying better. He's putting together better races. I'm encouraged by what I see, and I think he's going to have a strong hit second half of the season. Tyler Reddick, to me, has really been one of the stories of the season. You know, last year he won the championship in the Xfinity Series on the strength of two wins, and there were some people that just kind of looked at that, I don't know if he really impressed me or not. And this year, he's come out of the gate. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got a bit of an attitude. He's won some races now. He finished in the top 10 a couple weeks ago at Kansas in a Cup Series car for Richard Childress Racing. I am liking what I'm seeing out of him. He's not making the same mistake that he once did. He's not overdriving. He's not putting himself in bad position. He's taking care of his equipment and making sure he gets to the finish, which in a lot of respects is what you need to do. He seems like he's kind of gotten over that rookie learning curve and is really coming to his own. I'm encouraged and impressed by what I've seen out of him.
Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic joining us here on WGR's Fast Track. Jordan, you recently wrote about Stuart Haas Racing, who are amazingly winless to this point, while all their drivers are currently in a playoff position. What is the feeling over there with one of the newest members of the NASCAR Hall of Fame leading that organization in Tony Stewart? But how's the feeling over in that camp at this point of the year?
Business as usual. They're encouraged by what they have. They think they have really fast cars. They just haven't executed when they've had opportunities to win races. You know, Kevin Harvick probably should have won Kansas, had an issue, made an unscheduled pit stop that cost him the win.
Yep.
They just need to have more, you know, from the beginning of the race to the end of the race, they really just need to be mistake-free, and that's the big thing. There's a lot of good racetracks coming up for them. They are encouraged by what they see. The package threw them off for a little bit of a loop at the beginning of the year like it did a lot of teams. They have figured that out now, and they're much better and more consistent. So I think we're going to see them win. I think we're going to see them win a bunch here.
As I mentioned just a second ago, Tony Stewart, part of the 2019 Hall of Fame class, along with his former boss, Joe Gibbs, former teammate Bobby Labonte, plus the legendary Buddy Baker and crew chief Waddell Wilson. What did you think of the class of 2020 for the NASCAR Hall of Fame and the five gentlemen that are going in?
I thought it was a great class, and if I had a vote, I would have voted for all five of those. I think, obviously, Tony Stewart, to me, is a no-brainer. And I think Joe Gibbs is a no-brainer, too. If you look at the number of championships he's won, Daytona 500s, and his impact on NASCAR. And then Bobby Labonte, who's won a championship in the Cup Series, won a championship in the Xfinity Series. Waddell Wilson's one of the best crew chiefs of all time, and somebody really people don't talk a lot about. But from the 70s and into the 80s, he continually fielded cars that won a lot of races, especially in the Daytona 500. And then Buddy Baker, to me, going beyond just a driver, for me, as a kid growing up, he was almost the voice of NASCAR.
Yes.
He was somebody I listened to.
Yep.
It was just nowhere beyond that for me. I think it's a great class. I think they hit a home run.
Yeah, you and I are probably around the same age, and I agree. I know Buddy. I remember Buddy in the later stages of driving career, you know, driving the Crisco 88, but more so the great jobs he always did on TNN and CBS as a broadcaster as well, too, and a former Daytona 500 champion. Selfishly, I'm a little disappointed Mike Stefanik did not get in again, a nine-time champion between the NASCAR Modifieds and the Busch North Series, but that's just me talking as a Northeasterner. But, Jordan, going forward, do you think they should keep this five inductees a year format that they've done since its inception, or is it time to maybe tweak things a little bit with the Hall of Fame?
I'm definitely in favor of tweaking, and I think you have to get rid of the five required, you know, nominees each year, and you have to go to kind of a percentage, kind of like they do for the Baseball Hall of Fame, when I think it's 75% or 70% for the Hall of Fame baseball, where you get in. And if you look at it, NASCAR, we've had people get in the Hall of Fame and they've had less than 40% of the votes. I just don't think that's a good look for anybody involved. And I think if you really want to make the Hall special and a place that means something, you have to kind of make it hard to get in. And I think the best way to do that is say you have to earn a certain number of votes. And I think you're probably going to see that here in the next few years. There's nothing on the table in the immediate future.
Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic. Got to get used to saying that. Real quick, what are some of the things you might be working on, and what could we look forward to from The Athletic this coming week out of Charlotte?
Sure. We've got some in-depth analysis coming out of the Coca-Cola 600 tonight. Who's going to win? What happened? Some later in the week, we have some news about NASCAR and IndyCar maybe running a doubleheader we're going to be running, and some analysis there as well. All sorts of content. And then also Jeff Gluck is up in Indianapolis, so he'll have all sorts of stuff from the Indy 500.
Awesome. Like I said, congratulations. Ever since we've been bringing you on the show here in Buffalo, I always thought you do a phenomenal job on top of your writing when you were writing for SB Nation before. And I was bummed when you were kind of in a free agent mode and you were doing some work for NASCAR.com, and I was glad to see that. But this is awesome for you. Congratulations. Enjoy it. Enjoy the race today. And hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Always a pleasure, Dave. Thank you so much.
All right, Jordan Bianchi from The Athletic, and you can follow him on Twitter. He is at Jordan_Bianchi on Twitter as well. And we appreciate him joining us on this busy race morning, still underway in Monaco, about 21 laps to go, but Lewis Hamilton still leading Max Verstappen. When we get back here on the program, we'll talk to Nick Yeoman from the IMS Radio Network about today's Indianapolis 500, which, again, you can hear right here on WGR. That's coming up next here on Fast Track.
Hi, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the Jimmy Johns Ford. You're listening to WGR Sports Radio 550.
10:32 here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Dave Buchanan in a special early edition of WGR's Fast Track. We'll be back at our normally bat time, 11 a.m. next Sunday, to recap everything that's going to happen today in Indianapolis and Charlotte and Monaco. 18 laps to go in Monaco. Hamilton still leads Verstappen by about a half a second, so it's close. But catching them is one thing, passing them is another, as the old adage says. The quick thought there about the Hall of Famer talking to Jordan Bianchi. Mike Stefanik, we had him on the show when he was first, was the first time he became a finalist. And I think that was like 5 years ago, unfortunately. He's been on the ballot. He stays on the ballot every year. And this year, I think he was like the first guy out. Like he had the sixth highest percentage of votes. And I believe it was like 60-something percent. So it was above 50%. But could not eclipse the five gentlemen ahead of him, unfortunately, as it is. It's, again, the NASCAR Hall of Fame, not the, you know, the Cup Series Hall of Fame. So there has, you know, they induct drivers from all forms of NASCAR racing, you know, with guys like Richie Evans and Jerry Cook already getting in. So hopefully Mike's turn is next year. But it's tough now because, like Tony Stewart, you know, we're getting into this time where all these guys that the great class of drivers of the late 90s and early 2000s, some of these guys retiring and now are becoming eligible and getting in their first year, like Jeff Gordon did and like Tony Stewart has now. So, you know, and I think, you know, other drivers are going to be coming up soon. So it's going to be challenging with, on top of other people that have already been finalists as well, you've got newer names and big names that are being added every year after that too. So we'll see, though. As Jordan said, it might be time, though, to maybe change the voting process in general, because I don't know how many years it's been, around 10 years, I want to say, that they've been doing Hall of Fame classes since the opening of the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and they've done five every year, just kind of build it up, because there was so much history to catch up to, you know, 50, 60 years of history to try and catch up on top of, as I said, the new drivers and personalities that have become eligible in the years since on top of it, but maybe restricting that where maybe it doesn't have to be five every year. It is so many people that get a certain percentage of the vote. Well, that yet remains to be seen, but congrats to the class of 2020. They'll be inducted at the end of January there at the hall in Charlotte. But back on the Indianapolis 500, again, that is coming up at 11 o'clock here on WGR. And we're going to bring in one of the voices you'll hear on today's broadcast, Nick Yeoman from the IMS Radio Network.
As someone that lives in Indianapolis and has worked with the IMS Radio Network for a few years now, what does this day mean to you personally?
Well, it's a thrill to be just a small cog in the, you know, massive thing that is the Indianapolis 500. The tradition of this race is one that's, you know, kind of shared by folks in the Midwest, especially those here in Indianapolis. So to get to play a small part is really cool. The tradition, the history of this event is just so incredible. And I think the most fun part is there's people out here at the racetrack today that are diehard fans, that are here for the first time, and there's even some folks that don't even know there's a race going on. They're just here for the party. So it's a special day for a Hoosier, and it's one we look forward to every year.
Let's start off talking about kind of how we got here and last weekend with Bump Day. For all of the discussion about guaranteed spots and all that, it turned out, even with the rain delay and everything, Bump Day was pretty darn exciting, and obviously the big upset there with Fernando Alonso and the McLaren team not making the field of 33. Well, what were your thoughts on the drama of Bump Day last weekend?
Well, I would hope that how much fun and how dramatic Bump Day was last weekend, that that'll put to bed any of these ideas that, that maybe we should have locked in spots. The beauty of the Indianapolis 500 is you still have to earn your way in. You have to qualify if you want to race. And as you mentioned, just incredibly dramatic to watch one of the smallest teams in the sport, Ucos Racing, which is based in Indianapolis, you know, put together a backup car that I don't think a lot of people gave them a shot to make the race, and lo and behold, they knock out two-time Formula One world champion Fernando Alonso and the McLaren team. It was just incredibly dramatic, a lot of fun. I know our listeners enjoy tuning in and hearing the drama, but it was great. I mean, you have to earn your way into the field, and certainly when we drop the green flag here, it's going to be the 33 fastest that make the race, and that's what I really honestly hope that it always is.
And how about Hinch? I mean, his relationship with that racetrack and this event, almost losing his life a few years ago there, starting on the pole one year, missing the race last year, and then almost missing it again this year. What a crazy relationship James Hinchcliffe has with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
It's honestly incredible. I mean, there are some veterans that have been coming to the Indianapolis 500 for many years that have very ho-hum, nothing to write about years at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. For James Hinchcliffe, it's always something. As you mentioned, lots of highs, some incredibly low lows of nearly losing his life. And then, as you mentioned, he was one of the drivers that had to wait an extra day to see if he could make the race. I think for those in the sport, we were all fearing, oh no, the most popular driver in IndyCar is going to miss the Indy 500 again. This would be a nightmare scenario, but give a lot of credit to that Arrowsmith-Peterson team. They put some speed into that car, trimmed it out, and James did a great job of putting that car in the race. Now, can he win today from the last row? It's never been done, but for James Hinchcliffe and that crew, I know they're just happy that they're in the race and not having to watch from the sidelines like last year.
Definitely, definitely. Up front, it's a different story, kind of a tale of two teams with the three Penske cars, then the three Ed Carpenter racing teams. I don't know. I don't know if it's David and Goliath with Penske versus Ed Carpenter, but can you compare like this matchup, a heavyweight power like Penske and Ed Carpenter? Three cars, so they've got, you know, some force behind them, but they're still smaller, I guess, in comparison to Penske and a hometown team. How would you describe this matchup between these two organizations?
Yeah, no, it's fascinating because when we come to Indianapolis, Ed Carpenter Racing kind of feels like one of those powerhouse teams. But, you know, you follow IndyCar very closely. By and large, for the rest of the race weekends, Ed Carpenter Racing is a middle to the back of the pack team. Mm-hmm. So it's always an incredible story to see, you know, the Butler Bulldog, the Indianapolis native Ed Carpenter, bring his three-car team. And they're right there knocking on the door for the pole position. They didn't get it this year, but Ed's got three poles to his name. Interesting thing now becomes, do they have the pit stops that are fast enough? Can they stay on top of the strategy that we know Team Penske is ready for? It's going to be a fascinating matchup, but you're right. Those are the two teams that I think we're looking at. The odds-on favorites are probably coming from those seven drivers, the four for Team Penske. They put three in the fast nine, and then certainly Red Carpenter Racing with young Ed Jones and Spencer Piggott. Some talent, a little wet behind the ears, but we know that those race cars are really, really fast with Ed Carpenter's car starting second, third, and fourth.
Nick Yeoman from the IMS Radio Network joining us here on this special edition of WGR's Fast Track. Another team that I'm very excited about today, I think, is Andretti Autosport. Obviously, with two great stories. Marco Andretti looking to repeat what his grandfather did 50 years ago in winning this race and getting the Andretti name back to victory lane in Indianapolis. And Alexander Rossi, who came out of nowhere a few years ago to win this race and now has become one of the sport's biggest stars, someone I'm a big fan of. How do you think their two chances stack up today against the Penskes and the Carpenters in the field?
You know, we'll start with Marco Andretti. I think he's kind of had a quiet month of May. He's been efficient starting in the front half of the field, but I still don't think a lot of people are talking about Marco as a driver that can win this race, and I think that's kind of dangerous because As you know, Marco's got a lot of experience at this point in his career and has come awful close many, many times. It's a beautiful-looking race car with that throwback scheme to Mario's win back in 1969. So we'll see if Marco can maybe, you know, throw off that Andretti luck and put that car in victory lane. It'd be a tremendous story that would certainly make national and international headlines. And then Alexander Rossi is the one guy that I look at that can kind of upset the apple cart and prevent one of these Chevrolet teams, the Ed Carpenter, Team Penske cars, we were just talking about. I've watched Rossi in Carb Day practice a couple days ago, watched him in the Monday practice after qualifying, and there is nobody that can move his car around the racetrack, pull out and pass quite like Alexander Rossi. I think him and his engineer Jeremy Millis, they've got a feel for this place. He won it in a debut a few years ago when everyone was kind of like, wow, who is this kid? We found out in the last couple years, okay, Alexander Rossi's the real deal. I think Rossi's got a really, really good chance of putting that Napa car in victory lane today.
And then, Nick, I want to ask you about the rookie class, of course. Maybe one of the possibly best rookie classes at Indy in quite a few years with Colton Herta, the Swedes, Rosenquist, and Erickson. What do you make of the rookie field for today's race?
It really is, what, top to bottom, one of the most talented rookie classes we've ever seen. You mentioned the two Swedish drivers. They are rookie drivers in name only.
Yeah.
Felix Rosenquist and Marcus Ericsson have a ton of really high-level motorsport starts. Ericsson's got a lot of Formula One experience, and Rosenquist has driven just about everything, and he's been really fast. Also drives for one of the best teams in the sport in Chip Ganassi Racing, so those two are certainly going to be a factor. And then the one to watch is the one starting up front, the second-generation talent, Colton Herta, is just a superstar in the making, already an IndyCar winner at 19 years old when he won a race down at Circuit of the Americas in Austin earlier this season on the NTT IndyCar calendar. It's going to be fascinating because, you know, it's one thing to go fast for 10, 15, 20 laps in practice, putting 500 perfect miles together to win the Indianapolis 500 takes a lot of experience, and it's experience that those rookies, quite frankly, don't have. So we'll see if they can match the talent and learn quickly. Those guys might be a factor. Would I pick any of them? Probably not, but you and I both know that there is some incredible talent, and it's really exciting, quite honestly, for the future of IndyCar to watch as Erickson and Rosenquist and certainly Colton Herta 5-10 years from now, how good they could be.
Nick, we've quickly covered about a third of the field, but there's still a lot of stories in there. We can't cover them all, but former winners, the Elios, the Tony Kanaans, Ryan Hunter-Reyes. I mean, who's someone else you're looking at today that we haven't mentioned yet?
Well, I love row number 6 because you've got two former winners in Scott Dixon and Tony Kanaan, and then Graham Rahal, who always finds a way to be pretty racy. Those drivers struggled a bit in qualifying, but I think those are three names that you know are going to make some moves, jump to the outside, pass some cars. I'd look for Rahal, Dixon, and Kanaan to all charge their way through the front of the field by the midway point of the race.
Nick, we're looking forward to the broadcast today here on WGR. What can race fans listening look forward to on the pre-race show and the race itself?
Well, for about the first hour, you're going to hear from a lot of the drivers, and you're also going to hear the pageantry and the traditions of the Indianapolis 500, the playing of taps, the national anthem, and then, of course, thankfully, I don't have to talk my way through the intro to Back Home Again in Indiana because as a native Hoosier, I always get choked up through that. And then about an hour later, we'll be dropping the green flag for the 103rd running of the greatest spectacle in racing.
It's from the moment the theme music hits to the open to Mark James's opening comments, Donald Davidson's stories. It's one of my favorite parts about today is the radio broadcast, the Indianapolis 500. You guys always do a spectacular job.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate it, man, and thank you so much for having me on, and we appreciate everybody up there in the New York area that are going to tune in and share in the tradition.
Nick, thanks for the time. Have a great race day. Have a great call, and again, we'll be listening here in Buffalo.
All right, take care.
Nick Yeoman, IMS Radio Network, one of the turn announcers, and had a great chance to catch up with him this weekend and get his thoughts on today's race, the greatest spectacle in racing, the 103rd running of the Indianapolis 500. We get back, we're going to wrap up this special edition of Fast Track. We've got the local racing roundup. Again, a hit or miss weekend for local racing with the weather. This time, Friday was the better of the days, unlike the last couple of weekends when kind of Saturday is won out, but we'll hit the results there were. We can still squeeze in a few phone calls too, 803-0551, 888-552-550. We get back to wrap up Fast Track here on WGR.
Let's find out who visited Victory Lane this weekend. It's time for the local racing roundup on WGR's Fast Track.
We'll start off going back to last week. We talked to Kenny Schrader here on the program. Unfortunately, Sunday night, his feature got rained out at Humberstone, but Monday night did pick up the win in the UMP Modifieds at Merrittville, so congrats to Kenny Schrader. That's twice this year we've had a guy on. And then go to Victory Lane in his next race. Did that with Matt Williamson earlier this year, too. Friday night action, Lancaster Dragway, NYIRP. Joe Passero picking up the win in top eight. Mo Alfaki in the Buffalo Street Outlaws. Chris Scarlatta got two Buffalo Street Outlaw Street Limited wins. Pete Maduri Sr. in the TNT Super Series. Alan Fletcher in Bikes and Sleds. And Derek Kovac got the win in Street ET Friday night at Lancaster. Freedom Motorsports Park, they had a great turnout of super late models for the Ron Baker Memorial. David Scott got the win over Chubb Frank and Dave Hess. Sportsman Brad Rouse over James Henry and Zach George. Bill Taylor in the street stocks, Matt Mowry in the mini stocks. And in the Bandits, it was Tierney White picking up the win at Freedom out there in Delavan. Ransomville finally got a show in on Friday. Eric Rudolph won the 40-lap modified special over Matt Williamson and Gary Lindberg. Brett Senek, who won the track championship last year without a feature win, kicked off this year with a feature win in the Sportsman. Corey Sawyer in the street stocks, Mike Kramars in the mini stocks. And Butch Zimmerman got the win in the Novice Sportsman at the Big R on Friday night. Saturday was pretty much a washout for everybody. Merrittville, Genesee, State Line. Everybody got rained out on Saturday because of that big line of thunderstorms that came rolling through the area. State Line Speedway is actually going to run Monday night at hot lap start at 5:30. I think 6 o'clock is when they're supposed to start. But they've got the super late models, the ULMS super late models, 37 laps, $5,000 to win on Monday night there at the State Line Speedway. Tonight, if you're looking for action, Humberstone. It's got their weekly program that starts at 6:30. And then also tonight, Erie Speedway also has the super late models tonight down at the Erie Speedway. That's a big race. So if you're a super late model fan, lots of great action tonight and tomorrow. Coming up this Friday night, Spencer Speedway, the Race of Champions Modified Series, has their second race of the year. First one of the year at Spencer, the tribute to Don Pratt 62. Should be a great field of cars. All the series regulars, including Patrick Emmerling, is expected to be there as well, too, up against the likes of Chuck Hosfeld and Andy Jankowiak and Mike Leedy. But that should be a great show with a lot of bonus money up for grabs this Friday night over at Spencer Speedway. Ransomville has the Patriot Sprints coming up this Friday night. Hopefully getting back-to-back shows in there at the Big R. But just great to be back behind the microphone this past couple of weekends. Humberstone last Sunday and then Ransomville on Friday night after the rain-delayed start to our 2019 season. But good to get back at it. And hopefully a nice long summer ahead. If you are watching the race today or listening here on WGR, be sure to tweet at us at FastTrack550. Throughout the day, if you ever have any thoughts you want to share about the race, we can talk more about it next week, of course, too, on the program. But you can send us your tweets at FastTrack550 during the race today, either the Indy 500 or the Coke 600. Didn't cover the starting lineup, actually, for today's Coca-Cola 600, which is the 60th annual edition of the race that was once called the World 600. But William Byron on the pole, Eric Almirola alongside in row one, Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, Kevin Harvick, Daniel Suarez, Joey Logano, Clint Bowyer, Ricky Stenhouse, and Daniel Hemric, your top 10 starters today for the race. Kurt Busch, Chase Elliott will be 11th and 12th. Martin Truex starts 14th. Jimmy Johnson in 15th today. Ryan Blaney qualified 19th. Denny Hamlin 20th. Keselowski in 21st. Ryan Preece qualifying 24th. Bubba Wallace qualifying 29th for today's Coca-Cola 600. And it'll definitely, if you don't want to watch the whole race or listen to the whole race, because it is kind of a slog at times to get through, but I really think once the sun goes down, I think the action's going to pick up. As we talked about with Jordan Bianchi, the race at Kansas got really good once the sun went down in Kansas, and I think once it cools down, the aero package is definitely suited to the nighttime racing. So I think first half might be a little more single file leader runaway type racing, but I really think getting in to the later stage of the race, it should be very intense. They're in the closing laps at Monaco, and just some contact out there, I think, between Pierre Gasly and Valtteri Bottas as Lewis Hamilton. Yep, they're two to go at Monaco, and Hamilton is leading by almost second and three quarters over Verstappen. Verstappen was down to a half a second just before we came back on the air, but they are running out of laps in Monaco, and Hamilton looks to be on his way to chalking up another win as his lead is still about a second over Verstappen. Vettel, Bottas, and Gasly are top five right now. But it's kind of been the same story all race with Verstappen, just kind of chasing Hamilton around the streets of Monaco this morning and not being able to catch him. As it's been a pretty uneventful race, not a whole lot of controversy outside of that contact that just took place. I believe it was Gasly and Bottas. It was definitely one of the Red Bull and Mercedes cars tangling just a minute ago, just some contact. But everybody kept on going as they'll be coming for white flag in just a minute. So again, 11 a.m. In just a few minutes, we will go out to Indianapolis for coverage of the Indianapolis 500. And then right after that, around 6 o'clock, I believe, 5 or 6 o'clock this evening is when we'll throw it to the Performance Racing Network. Doug Racing Company will have live flag-to-flag coverage of the Coca-Cola 600 here on WGR. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you back here in our usual time of 11 a.m. here next Sunday with more Fast Track here on WGR.